Do you think you could win in a fight with Arnold Schwarzenegger?
Now, maybe.
In 1985?
No.
This podcast is not suitable for children or those who are easily disturbed. Spoiler warning for whatever is in the title of this episode.
And now for the obligatory socials. Please like, share and subscribe. You can find the podcast on Twitter at HorrorPod69. You can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Slasher and Goodreads. Become part of the Disturbed community by asking for the Facebook group and Discord links. Send dick pics to the horrorofbabylonpodcast@gmail.com. Support the show at patreon.com/thehorrorofbabylon. In closing, you can let your friends know that The Horror of Babylon is available on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Audible and all other major podcast apps.
Welcome to episode 91 of The Horror of Babylon, where we discuss The Exorcist 2, The Heretic. I am Ryan, and with me as always is Daniel. Say hi, Daniel.
Hi, Daniel.
And thank you to our patrons, Abigail, the First Breaker of Chains, Mother of Dragons, and...
Logan.
The full metal patron. And Ben! The fourth!
Patron of Hope.
And thank you to Four Horsemen Comics and Gaming, which you can visit at the Morgantown, West Virginia, the mall at Robinson in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and that mud city in Africa. And if you happen to wander into the new location of Four Horsemen Comics and Gaming in the stereotypical mud city of Africa, say hello to Ronald III, Grampus of Christmas. He's the one covered in sunscreen, or either that or he's horrifically sunburned. Kind of looks like Sharon at the end of this movie.
Is he the mystical white man who shows up in the African village to save everyone? Only to fail?
Nope.
No.
No, he's not. Before we get started, I just wanted to shout out a couple ways that you can support the podcast without subscribing to our Patreon or buying anything from our Teespring store.
Buy things from our eBay.
Yeah, you do that too. You can rate the show on podcast apps and write reviews, specifically the big ones, Apple Podcasts, but also Spotify, Google Podcasts, Audible, all that stuff. Writing reviews and leaving good ratings helps us in the algorithm a lot.
Yep.
And I know you're sick of hearing it, but liking, sharing, and subscribing, kind of a big deal. We just hit 200 subs on YouTube, and we did a 200 subscriber live stream, and we're going to do another one at 350 and another at 500, presuming we hit those numbers. Mm-hmm. But we're already, last I looked, we were at 228.
They're sure to make us jump up.
Yeah. So if you like us and you want to help support the show, but you don't want to or can't spend any money, which is totally cool. Totally understand.
Never did this to make money anyway.
No, but you can do those things. Like take a few minutes to write us a review on Apple Podcasts. You don't even have to listen to us on Apple Podcasts. You can create an account and give a rating and write a review.
You know, it's weird. People always do talk about how sick they are of creators saying like, comment, and subscribe. But there are several videos showing that people who remind you to do that actually get more likes, comments, and subscriptions. And there's like an optimal time to do it, too.
I tend to like a YouTube video either right at the beginning or right at the end.
Yeah.
When they remind you to do it.
Same. So. Yeah.
It is what it is.
It's just human nature.
Trigger warning. There's a lot of weird and kind of bad stuff in this, but honestly, I think the most triggering thing to somebody who this affects is if you're one of those people who just cannot handle bugs, don't watch this movie.
I honestly hate bugs.
Yeah. I like bugs, but even I was starting to get kind of, my skin was starting to crawl just a little.
There was just so many, I couldn't imagine filming this.
Yeah, it must have been a lot. I think the people who did this movie had to be on like cocaine or Ritalin or something all the time.
I'm just going to go ahead and get this out of the way. Have you ever seen like 70s exploitation like drug films?
No.
Okay, well this is what this film reminded me of. Mm. It was like literally an LSD passion project film with The Exorcist slapped onto it.
That's cool. And then our history with The Exorcist 2. I have a vivid memory of renting The Exorcist 2 and The Exorcist 3 and watching them. But I can tell you, as I was watching this, it felt like it was the first time. I remember zero of this movie, to the point that I'm thinking, did I rent those and not watch them? Or did I watch Exorcist 3 and not watch? No, there's no way I would have done that. Because I remember just the littlest bit of Exorcist 3.
Yeah.
But I remembered zero of this movie.
You know, I'm having a hard time because I keep going back and forth in my memories whether or not I had seen this before or not. And after watching this, I'm like, I'm not sure if I saw it either or if it's just something that my brain blocks out as soon as I can.
It's possible because, you know, I saw so many movies as a kid that I can't log it all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, like, I remember The Exorcist. I remember The Exorcist 3, the beginning, like, both the prequel movies.
I've only seen the fourth. I haven't seen the fifth, but...
Yeah. And we'll be seeing the soft reboot sequel soon.
Yay.
Yeah. Yeah.
The vampires are pure myth, superstition. I may be able to bring you proof that the superstition of yesterday can become the scientific reality of today.
So, jumping into background, this film was written by John Borman.
Borman.
Who you may know from...
The Korean War. That's the first thing I saw on his page.
He directed Deliverance.
Wow. Okay, that surprises me. Deliverance is pretty good. Second worst assault scene from a movie I've seen.
Yeah, that's what everybody mentions. That, like, yeah. The bow and the banjos. Yeah.
First one's American History X.
Yeah, that one's pretty bad. When I was a kid, the assault scene in Pulp Fiction really messed me up. But I think...
Yeah.
Reflecting on it, I think that may be because that was just, like, the first time I'd ever seen anything like that in a movie.
I guess when you compare it to freaking Deliverance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's done some other stuff, but that's the one that...
That's a big one.
That's the one that jumps out to me. And it was written by William Goodhart, who wrote three movies. Generation from 1969, this movie... And Cloud Dancer from 1980.
The Exorcist 2 is the lowest rated one.
And the highest rated one is Generation at 5.8 on IMDb.
Okay.
So, apparently he didn't have much of a career. I don't know. Maybe he died, but I'm not going to look into it. This film had a budget of $14 million and grossed $30.7
million. So it about broke even if you use the doubling rule.
But I don't know, like... how much you can use that for
older movies because they didn't have the same kind of like budgeting.
Mm-hmm. Because with modern movies, you have to take into account internet marketing as well.
The massive budgets, how much the theaters and overseas get to keep.
Yeah.
And overseas, like box office, wasn't as big of a factor back then either.
Mm-hmm. So, but it did not bomb in any way.
Yeah.
Which, based on the reputation this movie has, you may have assumed that it was a giant bomb.
Yeah.
Granted, it also makes sense that it did well because they also made a third movie.
Yeah.
And a fourth, and a fifth, and a sixth. And another thing I wanted to note is the film score for this movie is done by Ennio Morricone.
Oh my god, that song that plays throughout the whole movie.
I love it.
You too, you.
I love it. I think the score is in contention for my king. But Ennio Morricone, one of the most famous film composers, his most iconic work is probably the theme from The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, and a lot of other like spaghetti westerns.
I still need to see that.
Yeah, it's real good. The only other thing I was thinking... of course, it's a sequel to The Exorcist, which was based on the novel by William Peter Blatty, but William Peter Blatty had no involvement with this whatsoever on any level, although I assume he got a check. But other than that, he's not reported to have any kind of involvement. It continues the story of Regan McNeil, and in a way, it continues the story of Father Lancaster Mirren.
Mm-hmm.
What I was curious about is why the girl who played the mom was not in this, or the lady who played the mom in the first one was not in this. Okay.
Flatly refused.
the third returning member of the original cast is Kitty Wynn, who played Sharon in the original film. She reprises her role because Ellen Burstyn, who played Chris McNeil, flatly refused to return. But there, it doesn't seem... I don't see a reason on here.
She read the script.
Other actors who were considered for or were offered the role of Father Lamont: John Voight, David Carradine, Jack Nicholson, Christopher Walken.
I want the Christopher Walken version of this movie.
I don't. I think it would be worse.
Yeah, but it'd be funny.
No, I'm going to pass on that.
Yo, it's Pazuzu.
Pazuzu. Of course, he was eventually played by Richard Burton, a very famous actor from the 50s.
And that's that. Another story in the classic infallible three-act structure. Good enough for Aristotle, good enough for The Simpsons.
Mr. Sizlak, I have a feeling there's going to be one more act to this story.
Well, I'm not hanging around for that. Four acts.
Structure and themes. And I want to start with structure. But before I do that, I have to make a confession. All right, stand up. Hi, my name is Ryan. You say, hi, Ryan.
Hi, Ryan.
I'm Ryan, and I enjoyed The Exorcist 2, The Heretic.
Oh, wow.
This movie has such a terrible, awful reputation. And, like, I saw multiple things that said this is literally the worst movie ever made. I guess it's one of those things where it just, like, built it up in my head that it was so bad, and then I was like, this isn't a good movie?
I don't think it's in the contention for, like, worst movie ever made.
But, like, it's not a good movie.
Yeah.
And there are some real serious issues with it, but it really, to me, is not even close to
maybe worst, like, The Exorcist movie. I'd have to rewatch the prequels.
I'd have to watch the rest of them. I enjoyed this movie more than the trailer for the new one.
Yeah, me too. Okay, I'll say that the trailer for the new movie and when I found out who the director was made me appreciate this movie so much more, because I really do not like the Halloween reboots at all.
So let me just kind of... I'll talk about what I liked about this movie later.
Okay.
But I want to get into what was my main issue, and I think is probably what most people's main issue with. And it's the script. But the main thing about the script, because I think the premise is good.
Yeah, the premise is fine.
The main issue I have with this, which is kind of ironic because we usually complain about the opposite. We usually complain about over-explaining. But this one has... This movie has, like, basically zero exposition, and it hurts so much.
I think that there's a happy medium between the two that we're always looking for.
Yeah.
And this is the exact, like, opposite of the extreme.
Usually we get the other extreme.
Yeah, where they explain too much.
But there are several points in this movie where it just drops you into something, and you literally have no idea what's going on.
It feels random.
Yeah.
But, like, they just went, this would be a cool scene, without thinking about how it affects the plot.
A prime example is when Father Marin is taking the possessed boy up to the rock church. And it just cuts to Father Marin scaling, like, between these two rock walls with the kid tied up in a rope and being pulled up by all these monks. And you literally have no idea what's happening. You eventually figure out that there's a church at the top of this cliff and he's taking him up there to exorcise him. But it's confusing and it's irritating, and it made me want to stop watching it.
What about when Lamont goes to confront Darth Vader and then falls onto spikes and wakes up in a bug hospital?
No, I love that.
Okay.
Yeah, that's I loved all of that.
I was so confused.
The other, like, big one to me is the synchronizer, which after you watch the first, like, scene or two with the synchronizer, you get what they're doing with it. But the first scene they do with the synchronizer, they give no explanation, no exposition, no world building. It's just like, okay, put this on your head. And now, come down. Father, or Reagan, bring Father Lamont down to you. Bring him down. What the fuck is going on?
The magic psychiatrist machine is what I called it.
Yeah.
And you know what's weird? Because, like, hypnotism is a thing, so I guess they were going for, like, they made a hypnotism machine.
Yeah.
And maybe this thing, for all I know, actually exists, but it seemed weird and, like, science fiction-y out of place to me.
I think I don't have so much an issue with the machine itself. I just wish there was a little bit of exposition before it.
So you got like more of an idea of what it is.
Yeah, like if, you know, Dr. What's-Her-Face would have taken 2 minutes to be like, well, there's this radical new type of treatment that I've been using with my patients, and it might be applicable to this situation.
Yeah, just anything.
Yeah.
I would have literally accepted any explanation that made me, like, more comfortable with it.
And I think that there's a cut of this movie with different editing that would be less straining on the audience with... Maybe it just a little bit, even if it's, God, it would be so bad, but even just like a narrative, like exposition at parts would be awful, but at least it would be something. But what I guess what I'm trying to say is I think with all the pieces they had to work with, there was definitely potential for an awesome movie here.
Mm-hmm.
I liked it, but it is a bad movie. And the parts I liked about it, I liked so much that I'm overlooking the bad parts.
I can't say anything. Ryan has known me for a long time. I like some notoriously bad movies.
And
so sometimes things just speak to you, or you get something out of them that other people don't.
There are some things that I specifically like in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And also, expectations. Remember when Hef came for our Abraham Lincoln Vampire episode? And I believe the exact quote is, I don't believe this movie is quite as horseshit as you guys led me to believe it was.
Yeah.
Because all we did was bash and bash and bash how bad that movie was.
And we've been doing it for years.
Yeah, and everything I've ever seen on this is just like, it's terrible, it's the worst movie. And it is bad. It is a bad movie. It's no Roar.
It's no Roar. It's no Alien versus Predator.
I did rank it above Alien versus Predator.
It didn't kill Newt.
I did rank it above Alien 3.
So.
I did not rank it high. I'm not going to be like, it's my number 9!
Yeah, but still. Yeah, no, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, so let's talk about themes. Or what are some different themes from the book and the first movie? And what are some of the same themes?
Okay, so this might be me reading into it. Because one of this movie's strengths, which is also a weakness, is its like lack of explanation. So it doesn't come right out and spell every theme for you. But I was picking up on themes of like memory and repression. Like Reagan is someone who went through a traumatic experience and is repressing it.
So if I could take a minute to try and surmise the premise.
Yeah.
This takes place a few years later. I believe they're living in New York. Chris is off working, and Reagan is living with Sharon. And she is seeing a psychologist whose name is Dr. Jean Tuscan.
Reagan has not converted to Catholicism.
She is not, which is utter bullshit.
Yeah.
But she still, like, has, like, an obvious attachment to priests.
Yeah.
Which I liked. But she is seeing a psychologist for some... They never explain what her actual issues are, like, she having trouble sleeping? Is she having fits? Is she having seizures?
It's just kind of general.
It's assumed that she has repressed the exorcism from the original movie, and it's causing her issues. What issues? I don't know, because the movie doesn't tell you.
Yeah.
But she's seeing a psychologist for it. And then our other protagonist is Father Lamont, who is been assigned by a cardinal to investigate the death and exorcisms death of Father Marin and the exorcisms that he performed, because there's a faction in the church that's calling him a Satanist who wants to, like, I forget, but there's
excommunicate
him. Like, so Father Lamont,
is sort of fucked up, because that would send his soul to hell.
Yeah, it's super
if it wasn't already
up.
There,
it's super fucked up, but. No comments on the high-ups in the Catholic Church. So.
Yeah.
So Father Lamont has been tasked investigating. He goes to New York to meet Reagan, finds out that she's having issues. They do this synchronizer thing. He sees Marin's death scene, which is hugely ironic and terrible and funny, because like one of the things about the book and the movie was that you don't really know what the circumstances of Father Marin's death were. In this movie that explains almost nothing, decides to shit on one of the mysteries from the original movie.
Pazuzu will grip your heart.
And it just makes it like Pazuzu killed him. Like, yeah. We knew that, but like...
The fact that it's slightly vague is better, in my opinion, in the book and the first movie.
I agree. But what this eventually leads to is it turns out that Father Marin was on a bit of a crusade to find children who have been born with an innate gift of healing, and Pazuzu, the evil sky spirit, is possessing these children in an attempt to kill them, to squash that like new gene. They're almost like the new types from Gundam. They're like the next step in human evolution.
They're bugs with special wings.
There's almost like they're mutants.
Yeah,
they're like mutants, and Pazuzu is trying to kill them. So, as Father Marin was dying, he said this to Regan to plant it in her head that Father Lamont would figure out years later through the synchronization machine by sharing almost like a Vulcan mind meld with Regan that he needs to take up his task and find these children who have this healing gift and save them from Pazuzu. That's what this movie's about, which like the premise, I took a long time in explaining. I like the premise, but like it does like a really bad job
of like getting any of that through to you,
and you don't really understand like all of that until the very, very end.
Mm-hmm.
Which in and of itself isn't bad, but you're just jostled around so much throughout the actual movie, you're just kind of irritated and pissed off by the end.
You did a much better job concisely explaining the movie than the movie did.
Yeah, it's... this movie actually, like, sucked me in a lot.
Yeah.
Which is weird.
I'm glad it did, because now I can sit here and look to you for answers.
Well, I don't understand a lot.
Okay.
Like, there's so many questions. Like, okay, one, why exactly was Regan seeing Dr. Tuscan? Was she still possessed? Were there like remnants of Pazuzu still inside of her?
It's like having the chicken pox. It's always there once you have it.
Yeah. Is it like lingering COVID?
Yeah.
Like it's like that cough that you have for like weeks after COVID. Is that what happened here? The synchronizer is not explained really at all.
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
Let's go to characters. Let's start with Regan. And before we start, let's talk about performance first. We had nothing but amazing and beautiful things to say about Linda Blair in the first movie. She comes back for the second movie and plays Regan.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that it's not as strong of a performance, but I mainly blame that on the script, not her.
Yeah. The script, maybe the directing. Aside from Deliverance, I didn't recognize any of this dude's movies.
Mm-hmm.
When I saw Deliverance, that shocked me, because I'm like, he pulled some strong performances out of that. But...
I would actually say, like, overall,
mm-hmm.
the cast is pretty good.
Yeah.
Richard Burton and Louise Fletcher and Max von Sydow, and obviously James Earl Jones... are very prolific actors who have huge resumes and are all talented people. But like we've said, for other movies, you can only do so much with the material that you're given.
Yeah. And if you do something enough times, eventually you'll do it badly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know. So if you're in like a million movies, at least one of them you won't be as good as another movie. I didn't hate her performance, but it was almost kind of it depended on the part of the movie. A lot of it was like super kind of flat.
Mm-hmm.
There's that one scene where she goes up to that little girl, and the little girl's like, "Well, I'm autistic," and mm-hmm. for some reason that's making her stutter.
Mm-hmm.
And the girl asks her, "Well, why are you here?" "Oh, I was possessed by a demon."
I love that. Yeah.
But I'm sitting there and I'm like, you know, for some person who like keeps saying they don't remember what was going on, you just delivered that note so nonchalantly to a stranger.
Yeah.
To a little girl.
And if you do believe that you were possessed by a demon, why are you not going to church?
Yeah.
I would be.
If I even half suspected I came across a demon, I would immediately convert to some type of, depending on which, if it was like a Christian, I'd instantly become a Christian, because I'm like, Just on the off chance it's real.
Specifically, I would be an African rock Christian.
Yeah.
Because I just think that I'm really impressed by the ballsy way that they don't comply with the ADA.
Ah, thank you.
One, they're not in the United States. Two, this was before the ADA was passed. Three, shut the fuck up.
That's about all I have to say on Reagan, honestly. I mean, there's also that scene with sexy Reagan, sexy Pazuzu Reagan.
Nah, I have that in Kiss Me, Fat Boy.
Yeah, okay.
We'll talk about it there. Even though, I wasn't a big fan of Legion, and this movie has a lot of issues, I did like that essentially we have two sequels to The Exorcist, one that follows the story of Reagan and Father Marin, and one that follows the story of Kinderman and Father Karras.
Yeah.
Which is kind of neat.
Yeah.
One thing before we move on, what madman designed her balcony with that section with no railing? That has got to be the stupidest thing I have ever seen. I'm not afraid of heights, but when she was standing on that ledge, I'm like, what in the world is going on?
I sure hope you don't have prolonged problems with memory loss or sleepwalking, Reagan.
I know, right?
Otherwise, this would be a really fucking stupid place to live.
Yeah, why hasn't Sharon moved you, or why hasn't Sharon put a lock on your door or a bell around your neck? Or...
yeah, something.
Where is she? She's on the roof. She's always on the roof.
Literally anything but what you're currently doing.
Yeah, come on, Sharon. I think that the secret here is that Sharon hates Reagan and wants her to die. There's one point towards the end of the movie where Sharon calls Reagan a bitch under her breath.
Bitch.
Yeah. All right. Let's go to Father Lamont, played by Richard Burton. This is our other protagonist. This is the Father Karras of this movie. I like him. He's not as endearing a character as Father Karras or Father Marin. But overall, I like him.
I think of all the actors in this movie, he's the one that tried his hardest.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I think, Richard Burton is, he's not an actor that, our generation really knows.
Mm-hmm.
But, from, the 50s and 60s, he was, a really prolific actor. And he is a very talented person. And it sucks that our generation will probably know him best from this movie.
He seemed like he was the only one who was giving it 110%.
Mm-hmm.
Where, not that everyone was only giving it 50, but there were some people only giving it 50.
Yeah. I think kind
of... Which kind of makes him, pop in all of his scenes.
Yeah.
He's not overacting, but when you put him next to, Linda Blair in this movie, he seems like he's overacting because he's actually trying.
There are parts where she is, not matching his energy at all. There's parts where no other actor... except for maybe James Earl Jones is matching his
He's
energy.
Like profusely sweating in the psychic machine.
All the scenes where he's in Africa, they're obviously a set, but they did a really good job of making him look like he was actually in Africa, with him constantly covered in sweat, his face is all red, his hair is tousled. I think the main issue with the writing of the character is they gave you almost nothing to latch on to him background-wise. You find out a lot about Father Karras and his mother and why he joined the priesthood and his personal sins, and that really helps you latch onto him.
Mm.
Father Marin, you don't find out so much well, you do, because he has that confession about his struggle with intent versus actions.
Mm-hmm.
But you also just find out about the ethos of him and how revered he is and how he's written all these books, and so it's easy to like those two characters. But Father Lamont, you basically know nothing about, other than the actions that he takes in this movie, and he had some sort of previous relationship with Father Marin.
Yeah.
But Richard Burton managed to get a decent performance out of that character regardless. So
the actor strikes me as very professional. He is being paid to do this, so he's gonna do this.
Yeah, which is good. I mean, that's what you should be doing. He played Winston Churchill in the 1974 TV movie The Gathering Storm.
What a coincidence.
Oh, he was the narrator in Zulu, so I do know him from something else.
Zulu.
That is a great movie. He was Mark... Okay. You may know him as Mark Antony in Cleopatra.
Also a great movie.
He was Hamlet in the 1964 version of Hamlet.
Don't they reference that in The Exorcist?
Yeah, I think they do.
Huh. That's really sort of funny.
And I think The Night of the Iguana is a famous movie. I know I've heard that name before. So he was also in a TV version of The Tempest, so another Shakespeare thing. He was in a Midnight...
So he is very... classically trained actor is what it's looking like.
He played Alexander in Alexander the Great, the 1956 version. So yeah, this is definitely like a very serious actor. Dr. Tuscan, who was played by Louise Fletcher, who Star Trek fans will know her as one of the two big villains, or one of the three big villains, Kai Wen from Star Trek Deep Space Nine. Very, very iconic Star Trek character. She played Norma Manders in the original Firestarter with Drew Barrymore.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. What did you think of this character, both in terms of the character and the performance?
Middle of the road in comparison to some of the others.
I didn't think she was bad. Yeah. I thought she was fine. But yeah, it's just... I think, like Linda Blair, this is another one where... she was a good actress who kind of had a mediocre script and didn't try as hard as Richard Burton did.
struck me as not caring as much, but that might just be me reading into it. Because sometimes it's the director not pulling what they want out of the actor.
Yeah, it's always hard
Or like the director says, I want you to deliver it this way, so they deliver it that way.
And it's always hard to backseat critique this, because mm-hmm. you don't exactly know... mm-hmm. what went on set.
Yeah.
Even if you listen to interviews, that's always secondhand. And you don't know, like, if it's the script, it's the director, it's the actor, it's a combination of these things. Like, but all you can really judge is the finished product. And she was not the best performance in this movie, and also, I would say, not the worst.
Yeah.
What about the character herself?
I honestly just don't remember that much about her, aside from she traveled with Sharon at the end of the movie to find Reagan.
She was the psychologist, or yeah, psychiatrist.
Yeah, and she...
she had the synchronizer machine.
She had the machine, and she yelled at the priest.
You got a little background on her, because she was a single mom, she had two kids, but she's also seemed to be, like, in charge of this, like, weird hospital.
Very weird hospital.
Like, I would never, ever... consent to have my children treated in a hospital with glass walls. Like, never.
So Reagan talks to autistic girl.
Yeah.
Autistic girl starts talking. Was she the doctor who kept trying to treat her after the mom was like, no, I need to get her to home so that the husband can hear her talk?
Yeah.
Okay. I understand that as a doctor, you're very maybe curious, but she keeps arguing with the mom over what's basically a miracle for them.
I guess I kind of interpreted it as the mom was being a little irrational for good reason.
Yeah.
And she didn't want her to, like, leave. If I were the doctor in that situation, I would call the father and have him come in immediately.
Yeah, that seems like the compromise.
But I definitely would not have... because, yeah, I mean, like, they raised this child their whole life, and this child has never spoken. Suddenly, the kid is speaking. Like, if you're one parent and the other parent isn't there, you're like, they got to hear it. They got to hear the kid talk.
It's more important than the session to you as a parent.
Yeah. That was irritating. And your comment earlier about the autism, I think the understanding of autism in the 1970s
it's changed a lot.
It was very different, yeah.
So. Like, looking back at this movie with a modern perspective and modern psychological understanding, it isn't fair.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I wasn't criticizing you.
I know, but that is important to mention.
Kitty Wynn returns as Sharon Spencer, and they, as we learned in background, she was added to the movie because the lady who played Chris in the original didn't want to be a part of it. So she's really just kind of a substitute for Reagan's mom, and you really kind of feel that.
Yeah.
She's basically like a babysitter mm-hmm. in this movie. They give her a little bit to do in the end when she loses her fucking mind and sets herself on fire. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, you're right.
But that's basically all there is to say.
Psychologist lady, I can't let you in here because you're not written in the climax.
That was another, like, point where I was just severely confused. I was thinking, like, wait, was Sharon possessed by Pazuzu this whole time and, like, manipulating things behind the scenes to get Regan back to the house in D.C.?
Or did she get possessed just now?
But no, it just... She went nutso.
Cuckoo bananas.
She went cuckoo bananas and killed herself.
Which is my favorite expression.
Father Marin, Max von Sydow returns as Father Marin just in flashbacks.
Mm-hmm.
But I actually think, like, those are, like, some of the stronger parts of the movie. What did you think?
I thought they were the stronger parts of the movie. It depended on the scene, right? I really liked whenever he was more... distance, but whenever, like, it would focus on, like, the kid, and then the kid was in the same demon makeup, then it felt a little goofy to me, because everything around that felt, like, very sort of surreal and serious.
Mm-hmm.
And then the demon, and that's not Father Marin's fault or the actor's fault, but then you get the kid, like, a close-up on his face, goes, I am Pazuzu, which is very movie-esque.
Real quick on James Earl Jones, because what you said makes me want to talk about what I plan to talk about in Scary Shit.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we can just tie James Earl Jones into that. He's in this movie!
Yeah, Darth Vader!
Again, this movie was released... Actually, I hadn't said this. This movie was released the same year as Star Wars. So this is one of at least two movies that he Star Wars and The Exorcist 2, The Heretic.
George Lucas wouldn't let me be in the suit, so now I am a Lucas.
James Earl Jones isn't a furry. He's a...
Buggy?
He's a buggy? I don't know. Not scaly. He's a...
Yeah, because sometimes I was going to say they call some of them scalies. But so, like, what if you're a bug?
I don't know. An invertebrate?
You know, I'm in some, like, weird groups on Facebook where people just post the weirdest shit. And people make bug hentai now.
That bug you?
Yeah, kind of, because it's really gross.
Yeah.
But, like, they try to make cockroaches sexy. But James Earl Jones kind of pulls it off.
He does.
Kill you all! I'll drive you crazy, and I'll kill you all! I'm every nightmare you ever had. I am your worst dream come true. I'm everything you ever were afraid of.
So let's jump to Scary Shit. And I have to ask, is this movie scary?
No.
Scary, no. But to me, there are several scenes that are unsettling.
Yeah.
Specifically, the scenes with the locusts.
Mm.
And they aren't... Although I do think I would be scared if I was in a field and a swarm of locusts descended upon me.
Mm-hmm.
That's so...
Oh, I'd freak the fuck out.
That's so unrelatable. I can't really find it scary. But it definitely, like, gets under my skin.
When Regan, or Linda Blair, was, like, waving her arms around, like, she had the thing at the end of the movie, and the locusts were falling all around her feet. I was like, if you want to cure someone of their foot fetish, just put all those bugs around them. Peggy Hill.
I'm assuming you have not seen the third and final Jurassic World film.
Mm-hmm.
So...
I haven't even seen the second one.
Okay. Light spoilers for the premise of Jurassic World Dominion,
mm-hmm.
the third one. So it actually has kind of a cool premise. I'm not a big fan of the second and third movies, but it has kind of a cool premise in that what's the name of the company? John mm-hmm. Hammond's company, like mm-hmm. The big evil corporation from Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
They are experimenting with, like, the genes they use for dinosaurs. And they do it with grasshoppers, and the grasshoppers get out, and, like, this mutant swarm of locusts is, like, going across the Midwest just eating crops. And it's actually kind of scary.
Yeah.
And it's a cool premise. So this movie actually reminded me a lot of Jurassic World Dominion for that specific reason. But what I really wanted to talk about in Scary Shit is the production and the atmosphere of the movie, because there are a lot of ways where it really fires for me,
mm-hmm.
and it really speaks to me, and it's what I really enjoy about the movie. But then there are a few other ways where I think it's really terrible, bad. the main thing that I wanted to say in response to what you had just said was the makeup that they use, not only for the kid from Africa mm-hmm. who gets possessed, but the quote-unquote flashbacks they do with possessed Reagan.
Yeah.
I don't know why it has to look so much worse than it does in the first movie.
And this is something that sort of bugs me, and it's something that I noticed in, like, the new Exorcist movie trailer. Why is this demon, every time it possesses somebody, making them look exactly the same?
Yeah, it did with the two different, and with the new girls in them.
I guess it's the same demon in somebody, but mm-hmm. they're getting, like, the same cuts on their face and making the same faces. I'm like, if you're a demon and you're trying to, like, subterfuse and fuck with people, why are you doing the exact, like, are you not creative?
Another thing about this movie is when Father Marin excises the demon from the African kid, he, like, rolls over and he's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, in the book and in the original movie, after the demon is excised from Reagan, she still looks terrible and beat to shit because that's what happened to her body.
Yeah.
But it's just magically all...
It's just gone.
Yeah, that bothered me a lot. What I liked about this movie production-wise that really worked for me is primarily the sets, the music, the African sets, the Mud City, the Rock Temple. I know you probably thought it was stupid, but I loved the scene with James Earl Jones in the locust costume.
I thought it was really dumb. I liked the way it looked, but I was so confused as to, like, what was going on.
I didn't know he was in the movie.
Oh, okay, I did.
And I went, it's Darth Vader! He's dressed up like a giant bug!
I thought you knew.
No, it was so cool. And then, like, the only, like, physical reaction that the movie actually gave me was when Father Lamont steps on those spikes falls over.
But okay.
I screamed.
Maybe I was checked out, or maybe I was just too confused as to what was going on. He sees Vader spit a tomato out of his, like, a tomato just comes out of his throat and he spits it, and it lands on a spike.
Yep.
And then the priest goes, maybe I should step on this.
Well, he told him, you have to prove yourself. You have to come across. So that was the thing.
Okay.
So, and I'm just sitting there the whole time waiting for him to step on those spikes. And just in my mind, I'm thinking, if he wants to be the regional manager of Dunder Mifflin Scranton, he has to walk across that fire. Otherwise, he's not going to get the job. And then he fucking doesn't. It goes straight through his feet. And I freaked out.
I would try to, like, tiptoe around them or something.
I loved that scene. Again, I love the rock church is such a cool idea. Like, you have to it's a church that's so exclusive, not because you have to, like, make donations to get there, but you have to scale...
Yeah, it's not Scientology.
You have to scale a fucking cliff to prove your faith to get to this church.
I don't have a joke to compare it to anything else now.
No, I think Scientology. That works.
No, I mean, like, it's not paying, but now I can't think of a place where I have to... A Tibetan monk, I have to scale a mountain to get there.
I love the score. I love the metaphor of the locusts and how James Earl Jones is trying to breed a new strain of locust that will, well, a new strain of grasshopper that will resist the hive mind to become part of a locust swarm and will then breed children that will do the same thing and eventually over time will breed locusts out of grasshoppers. I know this movie is not good. I know it is technically a bad movie. I really got into this movie.
I'm glad you did, because I'm digging the energy you're giving. And I thought we were going to have nothing to talk about.
No, as a kid, I loved The Exorcist the beginning, primarily because it takes place mainly in Africa and, like, the archaeological aspects of it. And you get a lot of that in this movie. Mm-hmm. I thought the locusts were creepy and unsettling as shit. Darth Vader's in the movie. The score is awesome. Like, all of that, like, stuff, like, really drew me in. Not to the point where I forgive, like, the bad parts of the movie, but enough that I can, like, acknowledge that there's good and bad. Which is also a theme in the movie, because there's good and bad in Reagan, and they are doing battle.
Kiss me,
It's me, Fat Boy. If the body of a teenage girl is invaded by a millennia-old demon and you make out with her, are you a pedophile?
Yes.
I'm going to say yes, too.
How old is Reagan in this?
I looked up.
Okay.
Linda Blair is 18 in this film.
Okay, then no.
But the character is like an undetermined age. It says she goes to school. Obviously, that could be college. Mm-hmm. We don't know. I think it's best to err on the side of caution and say she's a high school student and say, yes, it makes you a pedophile. But I was curious to see what you would say.
The power of Christ compels you! The power of Christ compels you!
The power of Christ compels you. How is faith in Christianity, the Catholic Church, priests, how is all that depicted differently in this movie as it is as opposed to the first movie and the book? How is it the same?
It's the same because they both exist. It's very different in terms of tone, is what I would say. There's a certain like reverence that Catholicism is given in the first movie and in the book, which makes sense because of the writer. Mm-hmm. Where in this, it's almost treated as another obstacle.
My first thought was that it takes a more critical view of the Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. Because one, there's a faction in the church that wants to excommunicate Father Marin.
Yeah, for doing his job.
Yeah. And two, once Father Lamont actually has found some shit and needs to like go to Africa and take care of business, mm-hmm. they tell him, no, you're relieved from the case. It's like that classic like cop movie thing. Like, you're off the case! Yeah, exactly. And he has to go rogue.
I put together a team.
Yeah.
It's a teenage girl of an indeterminate age.
Me and a teenage girl. That's the team. And James Earl Jones in a giant locust costume. Hee-haw.
Everyone's going, hey, Mr. Priest, maybe you being with someone who may be underage isn't a great look for the church.
Also, in the earlier part of the movie, Dr. Tuscan asks him, as a priest, do you ever need a woman? And he just says, yes.
All the time.
No, he doesn't say that. He just says yes. And they don't bring anything else about it.
We don't talk about why nuns exist.
Nope. There's a nun in this movie.
Yeah. Oh my God. Are you Stephen King?
No, I'm Dean Koontz.
Oh.
Kings and Koontz. Daniel, what is your king?
It's James Earl Jones.
Yeah, James Earl Jones is sweet. I'm going to say the locusts, but James Earl Jones also played a locust.
Yeah,
so it's the same.
Two for one.
Mike Koontz is just the lack of exposition.
Also, that is my Koontz, because I got very lost a few times in this movie.
Yeah.
A lot of times, I don't bother to rewind movies if I get lost when we review them for the podcast, because sometimes we're under a time crunch.
Always.
This time, it was like, it took me 3 hours to watch this movie.
I watched it over three settings, and we had a huge rant at the beginning of the episode. Yeah. A lot of it just makes no sense.
Yeah, so.
And the rest of it, although I liked it, it's not good enough to forgive the stuff that doesn't make sense.
Exactly.
So, rankings, I ranked this ahead of time. It's not as low as a lot of the stuff we've watched recently, but it's not very high either. I have it at number 48, just below Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets, because nothing. That's like a lip that so many movies can just never get over.
Because I think it's not fair because we also watched that together.
Yeah, with beers and fast food.
Yeah,
and then it's above Salem's Lot 2004, Pet Sematary 2019, just like some of the mediocre Stephen King stuff. And here is the bottom half of your list.
It's in that Pet Sematary 2 range for me. I think I'm all just, you know what? It's right underneath Valerian. Fuck it.
Above Violent Night.
Yeah.
And below Valerian.
Yeah.
All right. No, I like it. We have reviewed 76
That's movies, so many movies, TV shows, miniseries, and anime.
Because, I mean, it didn't kill Newt.
It did not kill Newt.
It also strikes me as that sort of Pet Sematary 2 sort of weird sequel that at least gives you shit to talk about.
Yeah, but I think the key difference for me between this movie and Pet Sematary 2 is the people making Pet Sematary 2 were not taking it very seriously.
I think people, they took this movie seriously.
They took this movie very seriously. And I think that was to Pet Sematary 2's benefit.
Yeah. But I'm going to put it right in that range.
Speaking of which, Clancy Brown has a cameo in Ahsoka. So, just throwing that out there.
Just throwing that out there.
Just throwing
Daniel.
That out there. Homework. If you were building a church in a nearly impossible to get to location, where would it be and why?
You remember that Antarctic island from AVP?
Yes.
There. Ah. And it would be the Church of Predator.
How do you worship at the feet of Predator?
You bring the skull of someone you hunted.
You bring the skull of Schwarzenegger and fuck it.
Yeah, I mean, you could. If you could take him.
I fuck you in the name of the Predator.
Yeah.
Do you think you could win in a fight with Arnold Schwarzenegger?
Now? Maybe.
In 1985?
No.
What if he was drunk?
No, especially no, because drunk people hit harder and they can take so much more pain.
Yeah.
I fought in drunk people. It sucks.
All right.
We used to bring people in from detoxing before COVID at my work all the time, and I'm always on co-team, and it sucks.
I bet.
Yeah.
All right. If I had to build a church in a nearly impossible to get to location, I would do it in your bed. Oh, wait, that's too easy to get to.
Fair.
You're a whore!
Yeah. Yeah, age sucks.
Okay, question for the listeners. We are continuing the Name Game Violence Edition. This time is Winston Churchill, the historical figure, versus Winston Churchill, that cat from Pet Sematary. Who wins in a fight and why? I'm going to set a ground rule and say it is the reanimated church.
It's okay.
Yeah. And it's...
Does Winston Churchill from England have access to the British Army?
I'm going to say it's like height of World War II Winston Churchill. So he does have the army at his command.
That almost makes it a fair fight for him.
Well, here's the thing. Here's the thing. I was thinking about this. Like, I was like, well, he would just send the Royal Air Force to bomb the shit out of church. But he can't bomb Maine.
Yeah.
What would happen if Churchill sent bombers, like, across the Atlantic and bombed the shit out of
Maine? That's the Wendigo's plan. More dead people equals more people in the Mi'kmaq burial ground.
So, obviously, the Allies fall apart because the United States is not going to stand with Great Britain if... when he is sending bombers over to Maine. Does, like, and that it depends on when this happens, but does this lead to, like, a Nazi win in Europe? I mean,
yes. Winston, the cat walking around with a little armband now.
Hail Hitler, no!
First of all, he'd call him Kittler.
Kittler.
Mein Meower.
Yeah.
Mein Furrier. Furrier. Furry. Furrier.
Furrier with furry.
Yeah, both of those are good.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, for further reading, if you like this, I recommend The Exorcist The Beginning. Does Dominion also take place in Africa?
Yeah, it's basically the same movie, only there's, like, slight changes to what goes on.
Maybe we'll find a bonus episode and do, like, both of those movies
like
in
one. Like, compare and contrast.
On the two of them, yeah. Because those are the only two Exorcist properties that we don't have a plan to review at this point.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you have any other further reading for The Exorcist 2, The Heretic?
Basically, take any movie that was based on a book, right, that gets a sequel and watch that. Because that's kind of what this... I mean, that's what this movie is, but it also reminds me of that type of movie.
Right.
So...
Okay, so upcoming on The Horror of Babylon, our next two Sunday episodes on Sunday, September 24th, is our next novel episode, where we will be reviewing Five Nights at Freddy's The Silver Eyes.
Oh, we're going to get deep into the lore.
I'm so happy. And then the next Sunday, we are continuing Exorcist coverage with The Exorcist 3, the film based on Legion by William Peter Blatty. And then our next two Thursday bonus episodes on Thursday, September 21st, the Alien-a-thon continues with Episode 6, Alien vs. Predator Requiem, or as we like to call it, Avprick.
Avprick.
Avprick. Avprick.
Avpricks.
Avpricks. And then the last Thursday in September, we are back to Treehouse of Horror of Babylon with Wanted, Dead Then Alive, which is the Treehouse of Horror parody on Reanimator, which is based on the H.P. Lovecraft short story Reanimator, where Sideshow Bob plays, what's the character's name, Dr.
Herbert West.
Dr. Herbert West, and basically the premise of it is he reanimates Bart and murders him countless times. So we will be doing that. All right, and thank you to our patrons, Abigail the First, Breaker of Chains, Mother of Dragons, and...
Logan,
the Full Metal patron.
And Ben,
the Fourth Patron of Hope. And thank you to Forestman Comics and Gaming, which you can visit at the Morgantown Mall in Morgantown, West Virginia, the Mall at Robinson, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And if you happen to stop in to the Mud City in Africa, Forestman Comics and Gaming, to peddle your wares, you could probably trade some ivory and some elephant tusks for some back issues of The Flash, and say hello to Ronald III, Grampus of Christmas.
How do you keep coming up with things to say about this man?
That's what I did every week on This Week Here for Horsemen, just rattle off stupid shit.
Okay.
All right, well, thank you for maybe rewatching The Exorcist II, The Heretic with
Yeah, it's a... I'm wondering if I'm going to forget it again.
Yeah, maybe if this podcast goes on 10 years, maybe we'll come back to this movie.
And be like, did we see
that? Did we do that? Oh, we did an episode on it. Did you know we did an episode on this movie?
Let's just listen to the episode.
Yeah. Huh. And then I'm going to watch it again and be like, this movie's horseshit. What was I thinking? All right. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you to our patrons. Stay tuned for our socials and stay scary.
Stay scary, everybody.
Hi, Hef.
Hi, buddy.
And now for the obligatory socials. Please like, share, and subscribe. You can find the podcast on Twitter at HorrorPod69. You can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Slasher, and Goodreads. Become part of the Disturbed community by asking for the Facebook group and Discord links. Send dick pics to the horrorofbabylonpodcast@gmail.com. Support the show at patreon.com/thehorrorofbabylon. In closing, you can let your friends know that The Horror of Babylon is available on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Audible, and all other major podcast apps. Stay scary.